Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the March 28, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 15, verses 1 through 47. Carry the cross. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Well, Daniel is away this week, but we're excited we have Crystal Shepherd back Woo-hoo! With us.
Yay, Crystal.
Yay!
And just because it's been so much in the news lately and, you know, it's happening quickly, I'm curious. There's only four of us here, so it's not a very powerful poll, but maybe you're doing this with your friends too. I'm curious, two things. One, have you had COVID? And two, have you been able to get any vaccine yet?
I have not, although I've had some symptoms and been tested a few times since last spring, but I've not had it. Family members have, not immediate, but I have gotten my first dose of the Pfizer vaccine a week ago. I'll get my second dose next Friday.
Wow, so, that's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get it. I actually have autoimmune conditions, and so my doctor has advised against it right now. So I'm super grateful for every single person that goes out and gets the vaccine, because there are people like me who can't get it at this point. And as far as having COVID, I've had symptoms like before, but I also have a lot of anxiety around it. So the other night, my temperature was like 1 degree above normal, which so then I was like, and I had a stuffy nose. And so I was telling my husband, I'm like, I think I have COVID. And he's like, no, you don't. So I have not had COVID. So super careful, but a lot of anxiety around it.
Yeah. So I did get COVID back in December. I did, and it was not fun. Thankfully, I had a mild case, but I will say even the mild cases, it is not a mild disease. It was not fun. I felt terrible. And there were a couple days where I felt afraid, and that could have just been because of, you know, you don't know how it's getting worse and worse, because that's what a sickness does, and you don't know how bad it's going to get.
Yeah.
So it was kind of scary. I've been living on those antibodies for a little while now. They're probably going away. They say about 3 months probably. They're probably waning now, but I have not gotten the vaccine yet, but I hope to soon. So I'm on the lookout.
Well, I have not had COVID that I know of. And I have been able, like Bert, to get the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine about 2 weeks ago. So he and I are on about the same schedule.
All right.
Regina's a week ahead of me. She goes today and this evening and gets her second dose. So she's almost there.
All right.
But we're very excited.
Yay. Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody that can get the vaccine will do so. If, you know, certainly to protect yourself and your family and those you're around, but also for folks like Crystal, who, you know, we may pass in the grocery store or out and about and not realize they're persons who can't get the vaccine. And so this helps protect them as well. This is the Sunday where our churches most often celebrate Palm Sunday. And, you know, a lot of our churches will celebrate with children coming in, waving palms. Everybody's getting dressed up, and springtime maybe is appearing in your area. And, you know, we associate Palm Sunday with this bittersweet kind of joy, right? I mean, it's a celebration and a parade, but it's kind of a dark one because we know how it ends. The thing is, if your church observes Holy Week, it takes us through the journey in a deeper fashion, and in particular, Good Friday, because Good Friday is the day we recognize when Jesus was crucified and died. And recognizing that, for me, which I didn't grow up that way, you know, I grew up unaware of this. I knew about Easter Sunday, but that was the extent of our Lenten journey. But as I matured and had different experiences with different congregations, I was blessed to be able to be part of some who had this larger set of experiences around Lent and Holy Week. And it really, for me, was a great experience, because coming to Easter means a lot more to me after having gone through the darkness of Good Friday, to recognize the deep hurt and pain and abandonment and loss and all the horrible things that happened. And frankly, to recognize a resurrection without really observing the pain of the death is not nearly as meaningful. So anyway, I say all that to say because the text we're looking at today is really a lot of a Good Friday text. It's dark. It takes us through some of the hardest parts of this story and of Jesus's journey. So I'm going to let Bert get us started with this. But I just wanted to say these things to set the stage so you understand why it is an appropriate thing to do for Palm Sunday to take a look at this part of the journey of Christ. So, Bert, help us get started.
Well, I'll try. You know, life is always filled with choices, and sometimes the choices are very easy ones to make. Sometimes, not so much. 30 years ago, in my home state of Louisiana, the governor's race did not give people much to choose from. The Louisiana voters ended up with two candidates for governor. One was re-electing the sitting governor at the time, Edwin Edwards, who was a notoriously corrupt, arrogant, and tacky politician, who by all accounts should have been in jail instead of in the governor's mansion. And then there was the challenger, David Duke. Yes, that David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the KKK who idolized Nazis and Adolf Hitler, but gave up his white hood and robes for a suit and tie and espoused an ever so slightly kinder, gentler form of white supremacy. The bumper stickers and the slogans read, "Vote for the crook, this time it's important," and "Better a lizard than a wizard." Edwin Edwards won re-election in a landslide, thank goodness, but he was later convicted of racketeering and accepting bribes and all kinds of stuff, and he did go on to serve time in federal prison. Today's passage, a rather lengthy one, is Mark's account of the events on what we now refer to as Good Friday. Like he does throughout his gospel, Mark moves us along quickly, moving us from one event to another to another. The other gospel accounts slow down, and they help us fill in things here and there with more details, more sub-stories. But Mark is a constant flow of action, and there is so much packed into these 48 verses, and so many different things we can address and talk about here. Sometimes, maybe it's best if we don't talk about anything, we just read the account as it is, slowly, reverently, with emotion, and let Mark's story stand on its own, listening closely for the Spirit herself speaking to us. Now, Nikki, as she always does an incredible job summarizing this text and calling us to pay attention to the discomfort, the injustice, the grief and the pain of this text and this Holy Week and this world of ours today, be sure to watch her background video. But I'd like to take just a few moments and ask us to focus specifically on the early part of this passage and what is going on with Jesus and Pilate and the religious leaders and the angry crowd. The various groups of religious leaders who feel their authority and their power is threatened by Jesus' teachings, by Jesus' life, by Jesus' way, they are pressuring Pilate to make an unpleasant choice himself. Pilate is the Roman governor who oversees Judea, and they are demanding of Pilate that he execute Jesus, a man who has not been convicted under Roman law of committing any crime. "Religious squabbles are not my concern," Pilate tells them in one of the other gospel accounts. But these religious leaders have assembled and riled up an angry, ugly mob. Pilate finds no guilt in Jesus, and he seems to resent being manipulated by these religious folk over religious issues. But they have successfully managed to place Pilate between a rock and a hard place. He must choose between two highly undesirable options. Either execute an innocent man just to keep a subgroup of his contingency happy, or face a potential bloody mob revolt. Oh, he will win, of course, but it will be bloody, and he has had to deal with very violent, bloody revolts by the Jews enough as it was already, and he's tired of it. So Pilate offers the crowd a choice. He tries to step away from the religious leaders and go to the crowd directly. It's the Jewish festival of Passover. We have a custom. We will release one prisoner to you. Wouldn't you like me to release this Jesus of Nazareth? But the crowd, who had been filled with lies time and time again from the religious leaders, brought there for this purpose, they forcefully and loudly respond, "No, release Barabbas, release Barabbas." The crowd is choosing. The crowd is choosing the violent and exclusionary way of a murderous insurrectionist over the nonviolent and inclusive way of this master teacher and healer. What a powerful text for us this Holy Week, as our communities, as our states, as our nation continue to grapple with the clear choice between violent, exclusionary, and insurrectionist ways of white male supremacy, or the inclusive, affirming, welcoming, and egalitarian way of our Lord. The events of Good Friday remind us that we continually live out the events of that day over and over again in our own lives, in our own time. And when we are honest and open to the probing, redemptive work of the Spirit in our hearts, those of us with various degrees of privilege have to admit, we are quite comfortable with the way things are, and we really aren't all that interested in following the diverse way of Jesus. In what ways are we choosing Barabbas today? What would choosing Jesus over Barabbas look like for Christians in the United States this Holy Week in the year 2021 of this common era?
Bert, thank you for your introduction. I feel kind of speechless at this point because as you were speaking, I'm thinking about all the unrest that we have experienced over the last year. And then when you pose the question of how can we as the church choose Jesus over Barabbas, like I start to get anxious and I start to get sick at my stomach because I'm like, how do we do that? What are the ways that we're choosing Barabbas? And I don't know if I have a clear answer, so I'm just kind of like, you've stumped me by putting it in those terms, because we assume that as the church, we choose Jesus. I think that's probably a pretty fair assumption, and I don't think we do. I think there's a lot of times that we choose what we think is the easy way out. We choose to continue to prop up systems that no longer function, that didn't function, the systems that put our brothers and sisters whose skin tone is different from us in places that are deemed less than, or systems that do not make the voices of women equal to the voices of men. And so I think that if I'm going to like venture out on a limb, that is when we choose Barabbas, or when we choose to, for lack of a better word, like, you know, sidle up to politics, we're choosing Barabbas. I don't know that we are choosing the way of Jesus when we choose those things. At least that's the way it feels for me personally. But gosh, you've like asked such a hard question.
Right? Yes, absolutely. I feel so stumped. You all, David does an amazing job of editing what we do here. But the truth is, we just sat in silence for like 5 minutes after what Bert just did. Your work on that text was important and helpful and challenging. I don't know exactly how to answer the question. As Crystal was talking, I began to think choosing Barabbas is anytime that we sacrifice those who are innocent for the sake of the status quo. Mm-hmm. I think might start getting us there. Because we know we claim Jesus was innocent of, and he shouldn't have been punished the way that he was punished. He didn't deserve that. He had done nothing to warrant that kind of punishment. So I think that starts to get us there. But I also, as you were speaking, Bert, I find myself wondering, why do we choose Barabbas? Because we do it often. I don't think I have an answer, but that's the question that rose up for me as you were talking. Why do we choose Barabbas over Jesus when our claim is that choosing Jesus helps make us whole?
Mm-hmm. But Jesus isn't a safe choice, right? Like, Jesus was challenging the powers that be, and that's not safe. That's subversive. Barabbas is like, at least, like, Barabbas was violent and he was a criminal, but at least we know what we're getting with Barabbas,
right?
And we can have some level of control. With Jesus,
we don't know what we're getting.
We don't know what we're getting.
We don't know where that's going to lead us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and worse, I mean, I think this stuck out to me when you were talking. You said that they had been telling lies about Jesus. Mm. They had been putting out misinformation,
right,
about who Jesus was.
Right.
And that stuck with me clearly because we're in an era where, we're in an information culture. But the problem is, it's hard to know who's telling the truth. Mm. And people take advantage of that to smear others or to undermine their credibility. And I guess the part of this story that I connect with there is our willingness to believe the worst about people, or to even jump to that conclusion right away, to go, oh yeah, he was making himself out to be this good guy, but we know, here's the truth. And I mean, it's easy to go, oh yeah, yeah, I got suckered in on that one. And then be angry about it. So I guess the way that connects with the conversation about that Nikki was saying, that, you know, we tend to, how did you say it? We go after the innocent.
We sacrifice the innocent.
Yeah, we sacrifice the innocent. And I think
to
part of the way
maintain the status quo.
Yes, yeah. But part of the way we do that is we allow them to be demonized. We allow people to be demonized. So you can say, oh, well, I can tell from the color of their skin that they're probably blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Or, you know, they're not a person fleeing from oppression and violence in a country. They're an illegal coming into our country. I mean, the language we use tells a story that may or may not be true, but it definitely paints someone who may be an innocent in a way that makes it easier for us to say, take them away.
Y'all have asked at different points how to answer that question, or that you've had difficulty trying to figure out how to answer it. And I think that's the whole, I don't think there is an easy, it's just an uncomfortable, like this whole Holy Week is a time, Nikki, as you point out in your video, a time of discomfort with what is happening and then how will we respond. Mm-hmm. Nikki, you pointed out that after, when I finished the introduction, there was 5 minutes of silence before Crystal spoke, which will be edited out, but 5 minutes of silence before anybody said anything. That's still almost 4 minutes less than the almost 9 minutes that white police officer had his knee on George Floyd's neck. And we are quick to find reason why George Floyd was a bad guy than we are that somebody is intentionally kneeling on someone's neck and killing him while grinning at the cameras, knowing he's being watched. And now the tension that we're living in as we're recording this podcast is, will the court system and will a jury hold the white officer accountable for some degree of murder? Because he was an innocent man, regardless of what he had done, if he had done any of these things some people say he's done, none of them carry a sentence of death. And he didn't even get to have a trial.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of discomfort. When that happened last year, late last spring, early summer, I'm ashamed, I don't know the exact time, but
May,
I think. And when that happened, a cartoonist, a theological cartoonist, put an image of a police officer kneeling and replaced George Floyd with an image of Jesus, the crown of thorns, the robe, and just put it out there. And people got highly offended. And someone noted, if you're offended at at Jesus being murdered, an innocent man being murdered at the hands of the political violent system that will justify it at any cause or at every turn, but you're not upset about the violence of a system that will justify itself at any turn over the death of a black man, then you have failed to see Jesus in the life of George Floyd, and you have failed to take Jesus's teachings, including Matthew 25, including the image of God in Genesis, you failed to see all of that truth. And I think that's the discomfort of Holy Week. And perhaps that's why we like to go from the excitement of Palm Sunday with kids waving palms to the joy of Easter Sunday without a whole lot of reflection on what our part is in this story.
Because if we place ourselves in the story, I think most people would say, oh, well, I would be one of the disciples, or I would be one of the women that followed along. But we don't place ourselves in the angry crowd screaming, crucify him. Most often, I don't think we do. And I think the question that you pose puts us, the reason why it's so hard to answer, I think, in part, is that it puts us in that crowd. It puts us there. We have to figure out how we make that choice.
And Jesus knows that, doesn't he? Because if we go back and we're just putting things together from the whole context, if we go back to Matthew 25, all the good religious people, we would never have done this to you. Jesus, we know who you are. And yet Jesus says, you failed me miserably. I was this person and you knew me. You rejected me. And that's still the case, right? Of course we would never turn against Jesus. And Jesus said, oh, yeah. Yeah, you do.
You know, I think as I'm thinking about this, I'm wondering why we have such a hard time understanding those words of Jesus. When you do this to one of my children, you do it to me also. And I think that we have this way that the exceptionalism of Jesus, right? Well, Jesus, you're Jesus, right? So we're not going to do that to you. And there's something that we can justify in our heart and mind. But here's the thing, the same thing Jesus was fighting against, was teaching against, this corruption, this oppression, even if we have that exceptionalism of Jesus, that thing that he was fighting against to try to stop, to change, to transform, it still exists today. And it's right here where we live. And that's something that we are supposed to change, to transform, to help make life palatable for people who don't have access to everything that we might, that are intentionally harmed by the system. That still exists today, and that is something we have to change.
And Nikki, you asked the question earlier about why would we not choose the way of Jesus when it makes us whole? And in denying Jesus in the others, and in choosing Barabbas for our own power, we are choosing to deliberately keep ourselves, not just hurting others from having and sharing in our wealth, but destroying part of ourselves, keeping us from being whole. The Christ in us is trying to connect with the Christ in others. Mm-hmm. And the Christ in others is so that we could all be Christ to each other and with each other. But yeah, we refuse to be whole.
When I was growing up in church as a youth, I remember often these passages being studied, and it always had this overlay of that, well, Jesus had to do this. Jesus, you know, knew that this was his destiny. Jesus was carrying out God's wishes and had to do this. It's as if somehow that this being part of a plan made it less painful or less awful or somehow made it only about some cosmic forgiveness of our sins, that, you know, humanity sinned, and so Jesus had to pay the price as a sacrifice, and because of all that, this story had to happen. And it happened, and he was tortured, and he was treated badly, and he was killed on a cross, but it was all part of the plan, and it was for this cosmic reason of forgiving us, all of us across time. And I'm not debating that there's a sanctification that's occurring with this. But for us to totally focus on this cosmic scene of forgiveness is to miss the reality of this human person called Jesus who was walking this path and to whom this was actually happening and who I believe had a choice in the matter. You know, whatever we think about providence and God's plan and working, that's all a mystery to me. But I believe that for this to be meaningful, it had to be a choice. Jesus had to choose to give himself for others, for it to matter. And he chose it. You know, theologians and mystics have pondered what this was like for Jesus, you know, as long as there's been Christians. And one of them, our friend Thomas Merton, wrote a prayer. And as we travel this Lenten journey, and we think about our own paths in this world and in this life, and the choices we get to make, maybe it's a good prayer for us to consider. Here's how it goes. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I actually am doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope that I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me. And you will never leave me to face my perils alone. May we take seriously this season the acts of Jesus Christ, who confronted a system of injustice that killed him for it. And may we choose him over Barabbas. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.